This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Today on the weekend edition of Washington Watch, we're taking a moment to reflect on the election year in review. It was a long year for Americans, the FRC team included, but it was an important year, so we want to look back at some of the many efforts that were necessary to mounting an unbelievable win for conservatives across the country on Election Day. First up, Tony talked with FRC's Vice President of Government Affairs, David Christensen, along with J.P. Duffy, FRC's Vice President of Communication, about the Republican Party platform and its impact on a Trump election. Here now is Tony Perkins with that interview.
Gentlemen, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be here.
Well, I'm going to start with, it's been a really, really busy year, but I have to say one of the more productive years I've seen in almost 14 years I've been here. The Republican Party platform, David, you and your team were in Cleveland, Ohio to help craft what many have said is one of the most conservative platforms in the party's history.
Well, I think we were led by a good leader. You were a delegate there from Louisiana, and the RNC put together a platform that I think was conservative. It was similar to what Romney had in 2012. You had worked on that as well, but really there were some areas to fill in, and so I think working with a number of other delegates, you worked well with them on marriage and life, on education reform, on issues related to some of the regulations that the Obama administration has come out with in sex discrimination and transgender individuals in the military. Really, we're able to work on amendments to address some of those issues. One of the key issues being judges, having an originalist judge replace Antonin Scalia.
Right.
Fetal tissue, baby body parts, the whole videos, that was added into the platform. There was the issue of the unfortunate attacks in Orlando, the terrorist attacks in Orlando. And some of the delegates were attempting to use that to create special protections for the LGBT community. And you were able to offer an amendment to say all people have human dignity and terrorism attacks on all Americans need to be opposed. So the platform really came out in a way that was just very conservative, something that we were proud of.
And well, we actually went into the convention, concerned that we needed to simply protect what had been done. As you said, it was very similar. The starting point was very similar to what we saw in 2012. But what ended up was actually a platform that was even more conservative than what we started with. So we were all quite surprised. I got a sound clip from one of the chairman, the platform committee chairman, John Barrasso, who was talking about the platform as we crafted it, its purpose, and its impact. I want you to hear this clip.
If the candidates don't adhere to them 100%, what are they for?
Well, they basically talk about our vision, our views, our values as a party, and they can be instructive to other people around the country. I mean, we are best when we are united, talking about things that unite us, and they can also be instructive for our nominee, Donald Trump.
Senator, nice to see you. It's going to be an exciting week here in Cleveland. Thank you, sir.
We're going to win in November. Thanks.
That was a clip with Greta Van Susteren and the chairman of the platform committee, John Barrasso. J.P. Duffy, I'm going to ask you, was it instructive to the party's nominee?
I think it was, and it was also instructive to millions of Christian conservative voters who many of them were kind of wondering whether they should stay on the sidelines or should they get involved in this election. And we saw that manifest itself, and particularly on social media. It was interesting to see, even within days of the most conservative platform being adopted, we saw the conversation developed not just in all the media interviews that we did, but we saw that take place on social media, and that prompted us to produce a video comparing both the Republican and the Democratic platforms. And in that video, we used it as an educational tool to explain to people, listen, Republican elected officials, historically, studies have shown that over 80% of the time these elected officials vote with their party platform. And that video went viral like we had never seen before. Literally millions of people listened, watched that video and shared it with their friends. And it was particularly impactful on voters in swing states where they realized their vote could literally decide who the next president of the United States is. But even more importantly, they understood that it could determine who will be the next justice to sit on the Supreme Court.
Well, and actually Todd Starnes with Fox News talked about the impact that that platform had on voters. Here's a clip of Todd Starnes.
Kenny, what I find interesting is most Christians were not voting for Donald Trump. They were voting for the platform, and we know that because of a new poll that's going to be coming out tomorrow from the Family Research Council. And in this poll, nearly 6 in 10 Trump voters said they were impacted, they were compelled to vote because of the pro-life and pro-religious liberty party platform.
So David Christensen, I want to go back to a point that JP mentioned that was very powerful in getting people to pay attention to the platform, and that was about 80% of the times the parties actually followed what was in the party platform. So now we have the most conservative Republican Party platform in history. It drove voters to the polls to support Donald Trump. What policies do we now, will we see coming from this platform when the new Congress comes in January?
It's a good question, and I think one of the issues that you've raised and Donald Trump, of all people, has raised is the issue of religious liberty and particularly the Johnson Amendment. This is a President Lyndon Johnson provision when he was senator to bar churches and nonprofits from engaging and basically speaking on political issues that stifled the free speech rights of a lot of Christians throughout the country, and he's addressed that. And so the platform, there was a delegate that we worked with who was able to add that into the GOP platform. So him talking about the Johnson Amendment, religious liberty, talking about judges, originalist judges, talking about Planned Parenthood, the platform has always been pro-life. It's always talked about abortion. Right. Has never mentioned Planned Parenthood before. And that was a little bit contentious, but that was added in. And what we expect in the coming, frankly, in the coming weeks is a big fight to repeal most of Obamacare and to defund Planned Parenthood. And that is in no small part because of the platform and the work that was done there in Cleveland.
So, JP, when you look at that, you look at the exit polling, how 59% of voters voted for Donald Trump and Mike Pence. They're one of the key factors was the party platform's position on life and marriage. It was on life and religious liberty. What happens, if they don't deliver on that?
Well, I think you would, if there isn't, if they don't follow through and deliver on those promises, I think you would see a depression of that turnout. I mean, evangelicals made up nearly half of all of Donald Trump's turnout, nearly half. So it was the single largest constituency within his base. And when you look at this election, even though he won by a large electoral margin, when you look at particularly the Rust Belt states and some of those, the election was decided by 300,000 votes. Mm-hmm. And so an election that's that close, every constituency you could say is important,
right.
But particularly your largest one, and it's particularly important that it's overlooked and didn't get much discussion, that is the minority vote, particularly Hispanics. Donald Trump captured nearly a third of Hispanic voters. And when you look at the church attendance numbers and where he grabbed those voters, it was primarily among a lot of church-going Hispanics, evangelicals, and many of them were driven by the social issues.
Fascinating. When you look at that, given Donald Trump's background and the bumps on the road for him, you know, the video that came out and just his personal background. But I'm going to go to those numbers for a moment that you mentioned about evangelicals. I mean, 26% of the voters were white evangelicals that turned out, correct?
That's correct.
And of those, 81% voted for Donald Trump, which was a record high. That's more than voted for George W. Bush, who was a self-professed born-again Christian. So I'm going to talk more about this coming up with our pastor's team, because something was motivating these evangelicals to turn out to vote. And David Christensen, I have to think that a lot of it has to do with policy. The policies we've seen in the last 8 years that have been hostile to faith, I think that's why so many of these evangelicals responded. and why it's so important that we see some of these policy initiatives take off immediately in the new Congress.
Yeah, I think the left has tried to turn the Obamacare HHS contraceptive mandate into a war on women. And when it became clear the administration was trying to force the Little Sisters of the Poor and Catholic nuns to pay for pills and devices that they have conscience objections to. When you look at the ruling on marriage, we still have a slight majority of Americans who believe in natural marriage. The bathroom bill policy that the administration is foisting on every public school in the country. I think the issues here that the platform addressed and the issues of lawlessness and then, frankly, the Supreme Court without question.
Right.
You know, Whole Woman's Health, Texas, the Supreme Court struck down Texas's reasonable clinic regs bill and realized that if we can't replace Justice Scalia and put some conservatives on the Supreme Court, we're in trouble for a very long time. And I think conservatives came out, looked at the platform, saw that, and decided that, you know, these are policy issues that we care about. We're tired of the government trying to tell us what to do, take away our rights and our freedoms. And they, I think, voted in accordance with their conscience.
So do you think the members on the Hill got that? I mean, does Congress understand what this election was really about?
I do. I think actually I've been in a few member meetings, and I think that a number of the members feel like they dodged a bullet, really, and that this is, in a sense, a unique opportunity, and that they have a responsibility to govern as conservatives, to promote religious freedom, to repeal Obamacare and the lawlessness
right.
that's gone on. I think there's a lot of relief
yeah.
and a realization that they can't play games.
JP, 30 seconds. Did the media get the message? Did they realize that this was driven in large part by evangelicals?
Well, I think they were stunned. I mean, you saw it on election night as they're looking at the exit polling, and on some of the channels they kept repeating to themselves and to their viewers, how in the world is Donald Trump doing better among evangelicals than Romney and Bush and McCain did among evangelicals? They were scratching their heads, not understanding that their phony narrative that they were pushing, that the public wasn't buying it. The voters were going.
Yeah.
They were sticking with policy over personality.
And they were too busy. The media was too busy reporting how the evangelical movement was dead,
right?
And not having, which they do every 4 years. David Christensen, JP Duffy, thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Tony.
Thank you.
You can find out more about the Republican Party platform when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at the impact of churches on public policy. You won't want to miss it.
Can a Facebook post save a life? Or a tweet or an Instagram picture? At Family Research Council's 12th annual Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit, pro-life activists from around the country will gather to explore the impact that digital media has on the culture of human life. Watch free online the morning of Friday, January 27th from 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. At this year's conference, you will hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, activists, and testimonies from families and individuals who choose life. At the intersection of cutting-edge technology and a passion for the lives of the unborn, you'll be educated and empowered to better reach your community on platforms like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and more. You'll be better prepared to make an impact for the pro-life movement anytime and anywhere. Also, see live coverage from the National Mall as the March for Life gets underway. Tune in on January 27th at frc.org/prolifecon. Again, visit frc.org/prolifecon for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. With Donald Trump capturing over 80% of the white evangelical vote in the election, there is no question that pastors had something to do with that. FRC is more widely known for our legislative and policy efforts, but we have an expansive network of churches and pastors who we work with on a daily basis and an entire team devoted to nurturing those relationships. Randy Wilson is FRC's National Field Director for Church Ministries, and JC Church is a senior pastor in Ohio and the founder of Awake 88. They joined Tony to discuss the impact that churches can have in the public square.
Gentlemen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, Randy, you and I go back a long ways. Now coming up on 20 years.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yeah, we racked up quite a few miles in Louisiana as we were founding the Family Policy Council there, which is a Louisiana Family Forum. We traveled that state many, many hours and many, many chicken fingers.
Indeed. And I, you know what, I remember those times behind the windshield was great laughter, but great testimony shared between each one of us talking about family, talking about everything that you represent and have fought for these number of years since then, faith, family, and freedom. What a good time. And really, what a legacy that's been laid along the way from Louisiana to here now, well over a decade at FRC.
Well, and you, along with JC, are getting it done out there across the country now, racking up not so many car miles as you are airplane miles as you fly from state to state. JC, Ohio playing another critical role in this election. And I want to ask both of you this. Pastors, something happened with pastors in this election that got them more engaged than they have been in recent elections. You know, what was it? JC, I'll start with you.
Well, generally, I think that the main thing was the Supreme Court, the issue of the Supreme Court. Secondly, the comparison of the party platforms, that the undeniable threats to the religious liberty, the faith, family, and freedom, I believe has reached an awakening and a tipping point within the body of Christ as the encroachment has come into our world, that we're experiencing a real awakening, I think, Tony, and also, secondly, a harvest of all the seeds and the labor that you've done and FRC's done in trying to bring that awakening to the pastors and building a network. And now I think we're poised to really see, hopefully, a real momentum change with those pastors. But it was an attention getter. This Supreme Court's a big deal. The contrast between the platforms was a big deal, as well as the Johnson Amendment. That coming onto the radar and onto the scene really resonated with a lot of the pastors.
And the exit polling verifies everything you just said. In fact, we were just talking about that earlier with 59% of Trump voters saying the party platform on life and religious liberty was a key factor in who they voted for president. But there's even something, I think, greater at work here, Randy, when we look back at what's happened in the last 8 years, it may have brought pastors to a greater awareness of their responsibility to be engaged.
Well, Tony, our whole mission at Watchmen on the Wall is to champion pastors to transform America. And JC, you're a little familiar with this, that all of life flows from relationship. And I think that is one of the things that has brought pastors around is a time of investment over the years that we're just not knocking on doors, showing up, inviting to pastors' gatherings when an election is about to happen. This goes on, this relationship building goes on between election cycles because we want to build relationships. And it's not a one-way street. It's not us to them. It's providing opportunity and time to have conversations. Hear the pastor and what they're dealing with in their communities and, and congregations, listening to their hearts, and then working together. Again, not from our way pushing towards them, but working together, and not from D.C., but in their communities, asking, how can we work together to change the dynamic in their community, to raise the tide, so to speak, in that community, all centered around righteousness, and bringing the history of America, which is the freedom of religion, which is what has made America great and why everybody wants to come to America. They want to experience this freedom of religion to worship the way they want to worship and to live the way they feel God has called them to live.
And I think what we've seen, and this is one of the reasons I think pastors were more engaged in this cycle than they have been recently, is that they've seen the consequences of this attack on religious liberty, and it's trickled all the way down to the local level where they have seen and they realize that threat, and they don't have the time to change it.
Well, now is the time. And I would, as we've traveled, the pastors, I believe, got engaged. And the unique thing now, Tony, is they want to stay engaged. And that's something different. A lot of the guys, what do we do next? I think they've understood, as we tried to frame it in Ohio during this period, what's at stake. And that kind of was the theme we wrote. What is at stake? And we discussed that at length. Now, we want to transition to the thought, what next? because that got their attention, and let's never get back into this situation again.
Don't go away. We'll be back with Randy Wilson at J.C. Church in just a few moments on the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
From the ruling to uphold Obamacare's individual mandate, to the ruling to redefine marriage, to the ruling that allows the government to seize a citizen's home, these are the many important decisions that the United States Supreme Court has made recently. But did you know that each of these three decisions was determined by a one-vote margin? The Supreme Court's decisions affect all of us, and it decides about 70 cases every year. Over the next 8 years, we could get as many as 4 new Supreme Court justices. Furthermore, these justices will have a huge impact on the sanctity of human life, religious liberty, and the size and scope of government, and even parental rights. Join Family Research Council Action as we work to ensure the confirmation of Supreme Court justices who will uphold the Constitution and simply apply the law as the founders intended. Become a member today at frcaction.org. That's frcaction.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Before the break, Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, was talking with FRC's National Field Director of Church Ministries, Randy Wilson, along with Victory and Truth Ministries founder and senior pastor, J.C. Church, about the impact Christians had on this year's election. Here's Tony as he picks up that conversation.
Randy, I want to come back to you and just for definitional purposes, what is a watchman pastor? We talk a lot about watchman pastors, watchman network. What is that?
Watchman pastor centers around three things. First, we're asking pastors if they would pray, make their churches a house of prayer once again, pray for the nation, engage their intercessors in their church, and then push that out in a community, pray together. But then to preach on the issues of the day from a biblical perspective. And here at the Watchman on the Wall, we provide for them many resources to actually do that, where they can pull down full-text sermons, et cetera, bulletin inserts, outlines on the issues of the day. And these are not opinion pieces. These are scripturally based, research-based, all footnoted very well. So pray, preach on the issues, and then partner together. And I think this is extremely important, especially in today, to partner with other pastors in their community. And what we are doing today, more than ever before, is we're pushing down into communities and having pastors look at what God wants them to do in that, why He called them to that community, and then reach out and meet with another pastor or two or three pastors, begin to gather, pray for each other, encourage one another, and then ask God for His strategies for that community. And then we see if pastors begin to do that, God will show up because He said He would if we cry out to Him. And then for Him to start downloading strategies for that community, see communities begin to be transformed for righteousness mm-hmm. and His glory. And watch what that happens to the community in doing that. So to pray, preach, and partner is the three dynamics for a watchman pastor.
Well, JC, tell us a little bit how actually you did that in implementation of your Awake 88 and how that affected the outcome of the election in Ohio.
Well, the short of it is, you know, Tony, we look at Ohio, and I sat down a few years ago and began to look at the data, and there's 17,000 churches just in Ohio. And of the 88 counties, my thought was, is there a Bonhoeffer, a guy who will really stand up in each of those counties? So we began to travel and get word out and try to find the guys who understood not only do we have to preach Jesus, but we got to defend the right to continue to do so. Mm-hmm. That we're called right. to engage the culture in every dynamic. So we began building that network and saying, guys, you know, we must evangelize, we must engage, we must participate in the moral issues of the day. Morality matters. And from that, we've slowly built a network of guys who then as the issues have come up, they can respond. We can educate people. We can do voter registration drives. We can empower our people. We can get voter guides out. We can get engaged, helping them then to put into place what we have here at FRC, our cultural impact teams, and helping the pastors and those of you who are listening, you know, as pastors and who go to church, we have worship teams and usher teams and security teams and nursery teams. At the table of your planning, you need a cultural impact team. We need a paradigm shift. Our churches grow through participation and ownership, and we can really be the salt and light to the world and get the salt out of the box. If the church is like the box and we're the salt, it's no good just sitting in there.
Right.
We get it outside, we preserve, and we impact. And that's exactly what we've been able to do, so that then we can respond to the issues and make a significant difference. I believe in Ohio in particularly that the churches, the evangelicals, turned out in record numbers. We've said it this way. We've experienced the greatest move of God politically in Ohio. Not the greatest move of God, but the greatest move of God politically.
Yeah, there's no question.
No question about it.
Before we wrap this up, all right, election, evangelicals, critical in Donald Trump's victory. A lot of it based on his pledge to defend religious liberty, appoint pro-life justices. You've talked about those issues. Where does this movement go now? Where do these churches, Culture Impact Team, Christian voters, how do they fit in going forward?
I think unity right now is a big thing. Number one, we've got to pray, and I'm going to pray for Donald Trump, that God will continue to surround him with righteous men and women so we don't get off track. Number two is, I think, community-driven. Pastors, we must reach out and build relationship with other pastors and other churches, because in the implementation of a culture impact team, a church can start one, but if they don't help another church raise up a culture impact team, that one will die in about 6 months. But what a culture impact team can do in a community is phenomenal, because you can reach into the gates of the city, you can begin to cast vision, raise up righteous men and women to serve at the gates of the city, which is what we need more than ever before, to shore up and hold the ground that I believe God has given us for a time.
Well, I say three things quickly, Tony. We need a revival of prayer. I think we're experiencing that. We need a revival of patriotism. We're experiencing that. And a revival of participation. We must get engaged and stay engaged as we move forward, and the pastors can be those watchmen in their cities.
And there's no better way for Christians and pastors to stay engaged than through the Watchman Network and through the Culture Impact Teams. And pastor, if you're listening, you can go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. Randy Wilson, JC Church, great to see you guys. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tony.
If you missed any of today's program, you can find a link to it by heading over to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us and wishing you and yours a very happy and safe New Year's. And I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.